earlier, Israeli strikes on Khan Yunis killed almost 20 Palestinians, including women and children, and injured dozens. According to local sources, Israeli forces targeted a group of people in Beit Lahia in northern Gaza, killing 3 citizens. Earlier on Wednesday, at least 15 civilians, including women and children, were killed and many others wounded in the bombing of a clinic run by the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees in the Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza. On the whole, almost 80 Gazans were killed in Israel's strikes on Wednesday. Gaza officials say nearly 1,700 civilians have been killed and around 2,600 injured since Israel's onslaught resumed in March. The death toll from the regime's genocide now tops 50,400, with over 114,600 others injured. Our Gaza correspondent Moti Abu Musabe joined us earlier with the latest updates on Israel's unrelenting attacks across the blockaded territory. Listen.
At least 7 essential squares were demanded completely and fully to be evacuated from the Palestinian people. And we understand clearly that this is a prelude to conduct another ground offensive targeting the northern part of Gaza. In the meantime, those evacuation orders were architected in order to add more suffering for the Palestinian people, who are still suffering severely on the ground as a result of those repetitive displacements and the ongoing and non-stop Israeli brutal attacks that are still carried out day and night, left and center, in all areas of Gaza. And in this regard, we are talking about more than 77 Palestinian civilians have been assaulted since dawn hours, still this moment, in light of those ongoing and ceaseless Israeli airstrikes and attacks. And the fish attack took place a short while ago in Al-Manshiya Street in Beit Lahia City, claiming the lives of 3 Palestinian civilians. In the meantime, the Israeli warplanes carried out several brutal airstrikes targeting multiple residential buildings, particularly in Khan Yunis City, whereas at least 2 residential buildings were targeted and pounded by the Israeli warplanes in less than an hour ago. And even here, when it comes to the central area of Gaza Strip, the Israeli attacks are still ongoing till this moment. We are talking about more artillery shelling targeting the northern part of Nusairat refugee camp. And the suffering of the Palestinian people is still exacerbating severely on the ground here due to the severe shortage of the basic humanitarian essentials and needs. The Israeli regime is still shutting down all Gaza crossings, preventing the entry of those humanitarian necessities.
The UN Human Rights Council has passed a resolution condemning Israel's renewed onslaught on Gaza. The council also demanded the regime prevent genocide and lift its illegal blockade on the territory. The resolution, which was put forward by most members of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, was adopted with an overwhelming majority. It voiced grave concern at statements by Israeli officials that amount to incitement to genocide. The resolution demanded unimpeded humanitarian aid and the restoration of basic necessities in Gaza. It also slammed the use of starvation of civilians as a weapon of war. The resolution called on all nations to halt arms sales to Israel and take immediate action to prevent the forcible transfer of Palestinians from Gaza. The text also called on the UN General Assembly to set up a new investigative team to prepare prosecutions for major international crimes committed in the war on Gaza. Political analyst Robert Fantina joined us earlier. He said the overwhelming approval of the strongly worded Human Rights Council's resolution shows the world's tolerance for Israeli atrocities has reduced sharply.
This resolution should have been passed a long time ago. Israel has been committing war crimes and crimes against humanity for the last 18 months. It seems they have intensified, although that's hardly imaginable, considering the unspeakable behaviors of the Israelis against the innocent Palestinian people and the defenseless Palestinian people. So this resolution is long past due. I'm glad it's happened at all. Unfortunately, the United States will continue to block any aid to the Palestinians in Gaza. It will continue to support Israel in every way by providing it with all the weapons it needs, providing it with diplomatic cover in the United Nations and on the world stage. The resolution is one of the signs, however, that the world is fed up with Israel and is growing less and less tolerant of its crimes. So that in itself is a good sign. But there needs to be more action taken against Israel than just resolutions.
Various Palestinian cities and refugee camps across the occupied West Bank continue to be the target of violent raids by Israeli forces and settlers. In one of the latest raids, Israeli forces fatally shot a 15-year-old Palestinian boy in the town of Silat al-Harithiya, west of Jenin. The boy was shot in the chest after the regime's forces stormed the town with armored vehicles and unleashed heavy gunfire on the residents. According to the Palestinian Red Crescent Society, dozens more were injured in the raid. The new fatality brings to 35 the number of Palestinians killed in the Jenin governorate since Israel's operations began there. Tolkien was also subjected to Israeli forces' attacks for the 66th straight day. The regime's forces fired tear gas and sound bombs, set up roadblocks, and abducted civilians trying to return home. At least 13 Palestinians, including a child and two women, have been killed there. Thousands of others have been displaced, with their homes turned into military outposts. Our West Bank correspondent Nekar Hamed joined us earlier to bring us up to speed on the latest Israeli crimes across the occupied territory. Let's take a listen.
The infantry units, of course, inside Nuchan's refugee camp have made incursions and raids into the neighborhoods of Al-Manshiyeh and Al-Maslah. Of course, the raids included vandalism, burning down homes, and forcibly displaced Palestinians. Another Palestinian, a 54-year-old Palestinian man from Tulkarem, was hospitalized after being beaten, severely beaten by the IOF forces inside Nur Shams. If we are to go a little bit south over here in Ramallah, a raid have been performed towards the area of Ain Misbah just less than an hour ago, vandalizing Palestinian homes and terrorizing families that were walking into the street. Still is going on was the attack on the Haitian refugee camp in Beit Lahem, where the IOF, since the hours of the morning, have been raiding a Haitian refugee camp in Beit Lahem, attacking Palestinians, arresting Palestinians, occupying houses and making them military outposts. Of course, many of our colleagues have been detained and assaulted inside Beit Lahem. Our colleague Muad Amarne, Aya Ramadan, and Khalid Abu Aisha were all beaten inside a Haitian refugee camp to the east of Al-Quds. Many vandalizing, bulldozing houses and farmlands took place in the hours of the morning, demolishing of many homes to the family of Al-Haydat inside Anaka also took place.
Iran has strongly condemned the racist Israeli regime's continued attacks on Palestinians in Gaza and the occupied West Bank, especially during the Eid al-Fitr holidays. Foreign Ministry spokesman said Israel's crimes included targeted assassinations of journalists, deliberate attacks on medical personnel and healthcare centers, and incursions by extremist settlers into the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Ismail Baghaei urged the UN to end Israel's policy of using starvation and famine as tools of genocide. He criticized the inaction of some Western countries on Israel's violations of international law, calling it a clear sign of their hypocrisy regarding human rights and the rule of law. He called on all nations, especially Islamic countries, to stand in solidarity with the oppressed Palestinian people and stop further massacres of innocent women and children. Italy's foreign minister has responded to points on Israel's genocide in Gaza raised by senators during a question time session in the Italian upper house. Some lawmakers have slammed the Italian government's staunch refusal to condemn the regime and Netanyahu for their heinous crimes in Palestine. Here's more.
On Wednesday, a number of Italian lawmakers pressured Italy's foreign minister Antonio Tajani to finally express words of condemnation for the Israeli regime and Benjamin Netanyahu after 18 months of relentless slaughter in Gaza. Tajani answered questions on Israel's genocidal acts in the Palestine during a question time in the Senate. His words were far from condemnation for Netanyahu's heinous crimes.
Our government's position is clear. Conditions for a political dialogue must be created in order to achieve a two-state solution, but without Hamas. I will reiterate this at tomorrow's EU summit of foreign ministers.
I'm flabbergasted. Once again, you haven't been able to express a single word of condemnation for Israel's onslaught of more than 50,000 people in Gaza, many of whom are children. Gaza is razed to the ground. Minister, you haven't been able to say a single word on the one responsible for this massacre, war criminal Netanyahu.
Italy's support to Israel's genocidal operations in Gaza has been so far unconditional. In January, the Italian government told Israeli officials that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu would not be arrested under an ICC warrant were he to visit the country. War criminal Netanyahu is slated to pay an official visit to Hungary this week following an invitation from Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orbán. Some Italian lawmakers have said Hungary should deny entry to Netanyahu or arrest him if he sets foot in the country.
Netanyahu's visit to Hungary is one of the many legs of the Israeli government's macabre tour of Europe. We deem Netanyahu and his government partners bloodthirsty war criminals, and unfortunately, the international community and most Western governments have failed to provide any opposition to Israel at all. We must strongly oppose the Israeli genocide by imposing sanctions on Netanyahu's government, including suspending Israel-EU association agreement.
Former EU High Representative for Foreign Affairs Josep Borrell has often insisted on convening a summit with Israel to discuss violations of human rights obligations under the EU-Israel association agreement. However, Borrell's successor, Kaya Kallas, has so far been much more obliging towards the regime than her predecessor, Max Civili, Rome.
The Israeli regime has carried out fresh airstrikes on Syria, targeting a defense research center in the northern Damascus, as well as military airports in the central parts.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar.
According to local media, Israeli warplanes attacked the scientific research center in Barzay district of Damascus. It had previously been bombed in December 2024. Israeli airstrikes also targeted a military site in the Al-Qutaifa area west of Damascus. The regime also hit the Hama military airport with at least 17 airstrikes and the T4 airbase in Homs province with several raids. At least 15 people have been killed so far as a result of the intense Israeli strikes around Hama. Simultaneous with the airstrikes, Israel's military vehicles started advancing in the area of the Jabalia Dam near the city of Nawa in the Daraa countryside, pounding the area with artillery fire. Israeli forces killed a dozen civilians west of Daraa after its citizens clashed with them. Two Israeli drones were reportedly shot down in the area. Mosques in Daraa called for a general mobilization, urging people to take up arms for resistance against the Israeli incursion. The United States continues with its deadly airstrikes on various areas across Yemen in a bid to force the country to stop its support for the Palestinian people. In their latest aggression, U.S. warplanes conducted an airstrike in the Gaza district in Sana'a governorate, targeting a civilian car. No report on possible casualties yet. The United States also carried out air raids on Saada governorate. According to local sources, American warplanes targeted various areas southeast of Saada city with nearly 20 airstrikes. An airstrike also targeted the Red Isa area or the Ras Isa area in Al-Salif, killing one citizen and wounding another. More American airstrikes targeted Taiz governorate and the communications network in Ib. The air raid on Ib left one civilian dead. Hodeida governorate was also hit with new air raids after an earlier attack on Tuesday struck a water reservoir in the city of Al-Mansouriya, leaving five people dead and several others injured. The attack also disrupted water services to more than 50,000 civilians. Iranians all over the country are celebrating the ancient tradition of Sizdeh Bedar, or Nature Day, by spending quality time with their loved ones outdoors as the holy month of Ramadan ends with Eid al-Fitr celebrations. Fatima Masumi tells us more.
Sizdeh Bedar, uniquely Iranian, brings families outdoors on the 13th day of Farvardin to enjoy picnics, games, and nature. People eat traditional foods, play music, and throw sprouted greens into rivers to ward off bad luck. This year, Iran's cherished Nature Day coincides with Eid al-Fitr, the most significant celebration for Muslims worldwide.
Today is Nature Day, the 13th of the new year. Traditionally, we have come out with the whole family to enjoy our time together. We tell jokes, laugh, and try to let go of the challenges and fatigue we faced throughout the year.
Since today was Nature Day, we thought this music would bring harmony to our gathering with friends. We came out to play music so others could enjoy it too.
Marking a rare and meaningful convergence of traditions, Nowruz, the Persian New Year, began with the holy month of Ramadan, intertwining renewal with devotion. As the month of fasting ended, so did Nowruz, and their dual conclusion gave way to two significant celebrations, Eid al-Fitr and Sizdeh Bedar.
Like other Iranians, we spent Nature Day in nature. We enjoy eating traditional foods like kebab.
This year, Nature Day coincided with Eid al-Fitr, which was very special for us Iranians and Muslims worldwide.
We've come here for Nature's Day with our friends to have some fun with volleyball and frisbee and my friend playing song for us.
Nature Day in Iran is a joyful celebration of nature, family, and renewal. People reunite outdoors, embracing fresh energy before returning to work. It's a day of fun, remembrance, and appreciation for nature's beauty, filling hearts with joy and spirits with new vitality.
And today marks the conclusion of Nowruz holidays for the Iranian people, a particularly significant Nowruz as it coincided with the ending of the holy month of Ramadan. Fateh Masumi, Tehran.
With that, we come to the end of this bulletin. Thank you for listening. Take care and bye-bye for now.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
the limelight.
A pillar of French sovereignty and source of national pride, France's nuclear deterrent has long served as a symbol of the country's independence from Washington. But can France's nuclear umbrella deter Russia? We take a look at the global media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. French national broadcaster France 24, France 24, has covered this story and tells us more. French President Emmanuel Macron has offered to hold talks on extending the protection offered by France's nuclear arsenal to its European partners amid fears of an American disengagement from Europe. While the United States has made no mention of plans to withdraw the nuclear umbrella that has protected the continent since the Cold War, its dramatically shifting stance on Ukraine, Russia, and NATO has sparked alarm across Europe about the strength of America's decades-long commitment to European security. In a measure of the mounting anxiety in Europe, the leaders of Poland, Latvia, and Lithuania, countries closely aligned with Washington, all welcomed Emmanuel Macron's offer on Thursday as they gathered in Brussels for an emergency summit on European security. That offer has in fact been on the table for years. The difference is that France's European partners are now taking an interest, eager for security alternatives should US President Donald Trump leave them to dry at the mercy of Russia. Addressing the French public on the eve of the summit, Emmanuel Macron described Russia as a threat to France and Europe and said he had decided to open the strategic debate on the protection of our allies on the European continent by our nuclear deterrent. President Macron added, Europe's future does not have to be decided in Washington or Moscow. The French nuclear deterrent is rooted in a lingering distrust of its American ally that dates back all the way to the 1956 Suez Crisis, when Washington forced France and Britain to abandon efforts to recapture the strategic Suez Canal in a humiliating setback for Europe's declining colonial powers. Seen as an American betrayal, Suez convinced the French to develop their own nuclear deterrent in order to protect the nation's vital interests. A decade later, distrust of America and a desire to pursue strategic autonomy underpinned President Charles de Gaulle's decision to withdraw France from NATO's integrated command, resulting in the removal of U.S. military assets from French soil. Over the years, successive French leaders have urged European allies to reduce their reliance on the United States, none more so than Emmanuel Macron, who has repeatedly called on Europe to guarantee its own security. As Washington turns its back on Ukraine, warms to an aggressive Russia, and cuts Europe out of peace talks, French officials are now feeling vindicated. One analyst described the continent's current predicament as Macron's told-you-so moment. France is one of two nuclear powers in Europe, along with Britain, which is no longer part of the European Union and relies on the United States' input to maintain its nuclear arsenal. French nuclear deterrence is strictly conceived as defensive, designed to protect the country's vital interests. The deliberately vague nature of these interests has traditionally given France greater leeway compared to Britain, whose nuclear capabilities are explicitly assigned to the defense of NATO. Since a 2020 keynote speech, Emmanuel Macron has said France's vital interests have a European dimension, comments that he reiterated in recent days. His predecessors have made similar statements in the past, with former President François Mitterrand once touting the need for a European doctrine on nuclear deterrence. Maintaining a certain vagueness about France's vital interests is at the heart of the strategic ambiguity that underpins nuclear deterrence, according to Alain Deneuve, a researcher at the Royal Higher Institute for Defence in Brussels, Belgium. Alain Deneuve added, "This is to keep opponents in the dark about the scope of France's nuclear umbrella. Nuclear deterrence involves maintaining ambiguity about which circumstances would lead to the use of nuclear weapons in order to prevent a potential aggressor from calculating risks. In this case, it means striking a balance between giving substance to French claims of a vested interest in Europe's defense and avoiding detail about how far Paris would go to defend the European continent. France likes to remind people of its capabilities in order to be credible in its deterrence." According to Emmanuel Maître, a senior research fellow at France's Foundation for Strategic Research, Emmanuel Maître said, "But there's also an element of ambiguity, because it's not a question of telling our adversary exactly what our red lines are. No nuclear power does this." BBC has also covered the same story and tells us more. So in the end, Charles de Gaulle was right. As president of France in the 1960s, it was he who launched the policy of French strategic independence. "Of course," he said, "Americans were more our friends than Russians are. But the United States too had interests, and one day their interests would clash with ours." In the world of today, Charles de Gaulle's warnings have never seemed more clairvoyant. From his principle of superpower detachment, de Gaulle conjured the notion of France's sovereign nuclear deterrent, whose existence is now at the center of debates over European security. France and Britain are the only two countries on the European continent which have nuclear weapons. Currently, France, which is short of 300 nuclear warheads, which can be fired from France-based aircraft or from submarines. Britain has about 250 nuclear warheads. The big difference is that the French arsenal is sovereign. That is, developed entirely by France, whereas the British rely on the Americans' technical input. On Wednesday, French President Emmanuel Macron aired the idea that France's deterrence force, or Force de Frappe, could, in this highly uncertain new era, be associated with the defense of other European countries. His suggestion drew outrage from politicians on the hard right and the hard left, who say that France is considering sharing its nuclear arsenal with other countries. That, according to government officials as well as defense experts, is a falsification of the argument. Nothing is to be shared. According to France's Defense Minister, Sébastien Lecornu, the nuclear deterrent is French and will remain French, from its conception to its production to its operation under a decision of the President of France. What is under discussion is not more fingers on the nuclear button, it is whether France's nuclear protection can be explicitly extended to include other European countries. Until now, French nuclear doctrine has been built around the threat of a massive nuclear response if the president, through the vital interests of France, were at stake. The limits of these vital interests have always been left deliberately vague, ambiguity and credibility being the two watchwords of nuclear deterrence. In fact, French presidents, going back to Charles de Gaulle himself, have all hinted that some European countries might de facto already be under the umbrella. In 1964, Charles de Gaulle said that France would consider itself threatened if, for example, the former Soviet Union attacked Germany. So in one way, there is nothing new in Emmanuel Macron suggesting a European dimension to France's deterrent. What is new, according to defense analysts, is that for the first time, other European countries are also asking for it. In the past, when France has made overtures about extending nuclear protection, other countries were reluctant to respond, according to Pierre Harouche, of the Catholic University of Lille. Pierre Harouche says they didn't want to send out the signal that they did not have complete faith in the US and NATO. But Donald Trump has clarified the debate. It is not the Americans are taking or removing their nuclear deterrence. Let's be clear about that. That does not seem to be on the table right now. But the credibility of US nuclear dissuasion is not what it was. That has opened up the debate and led the Germans to look more favorably on the idea of coming under a French and or a British nuclear umbrella.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
With the presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints. I'm Atta, the host of this program. This series of the program Viewpoints is mainly concerned with the speeches and thoughts of the Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, also known as Imam Khamenei. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Shaykh Ali and Sayyid Mohsen. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, thanks for inviting.
So, and Shaykh Ali, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So, very recently in one of the speeches of Imam Khamenei, he talked about a very important concept, which is Jihad al-Tabyin. And so many people in Iran, inside Iran and outside Iran, were shocked by this, we can say, type of look at the world and at the concept of jihad. Because this is the first time that this term has been coined by the Rahbar and he used it. So now there are so many, we can say, explanations, commentaries and interpretations written on this concept. Of course, Rahbar in his speech gave us a very nice framework for Jihad al-Tabyin. But this is good to be more familiar with this concept, maybe for the English-speaking people all around the world through this radio show, Viewpoints. Even inside the Islamic land, the key holders of the Kaaba and the Mecca, I mean the Wahhabis and all these kings over there, okay, are hand in hand with the enemy of Islam. So is it at all true to say that Islamic Republic of Iran is alone? Or no, maybe this Jihad al-Tabyin can also attract some people out of the borders of Islam. For example, Christians, Jews, those who are after the social justice, justice seekers across the world, those people who believe in the concept of the last savior, for example. Okay? What's your answer to that?
Well, I think because the Islamic revolution was based on the pure Mohammedan Islam, and the difference between this country, which is Iran, obviously we know it as the Islamic revolutionary country, not the Iran, the state only the as in Iran.
Okay.
It's a revolutionary country and it's an Islamic revolutionary country. Therefore, we can see that because the main aim was to gain Islam, to have Islam in this country, to apply the pure Mohammedan Islam in this country. That's why we can see it is on the front foot. And we clearly see Iran being engaged with all these things.
Yes.
But on the other hand, we cannot say it is just Iran. Other people, other countries are also involved, not at the government level. For example, you know, whenever something happens to the against the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam or the Quran, the very first people which we see who have you know, protests and all those things, it always happens in Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people themselves, not the government. I'm not talking about the governments right now.
Yes.
Within the people, we can see, and the Supreme Leader also has said, the belief that the Pakistani Muslims have, they have a firm belief on the Quran and the Prophet.
Yes.
You know, if someone says anything to the Prophet or the Quran, they, according to their beliefs, they do protest. Whether it's happened in the France or in any other part of the world, they stand against it. So we can see people doing that, but because the governments are not sincere, because the governments are following the, you know, the strategy that are set by the capitalism.
Yes.
They are following a different system within the Islamic State, and they just have the name of the Islamic State. That's why we cannot see these countries, these governments, or the rulers of these countries being on the front foot.
Yes.
On the other hand, we can see, like, for example, the example that you gave for the Ahle Saud and all those,
they're just
pretending to be the Muslims. You know, the land which was free of the idols, which was free out of all the non-Islamic rituals and all those things, they are just doing that again. They just brought that again. They're like killing people. They finance ISIS. You know, all these things, this shows that they're not the true followers of Islam, but they are the puppets who have been plotted mm-hmm. in these countries.
Yes.
And we know that there's a term which is used in the Quran, and it can be used in all the times for the enemies, and that is taghut,
mm-hmm.
rebels.
Yes.
Taghut is a good term for all the times.
Aggressors. You
know, so we can use this term for anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And as we know that Imam Khomeini also mentioned that the America is the big Saturn,
and
the Shaitan Bozorg, big Saturn, how it is doing, what it is doing, what he has done to the, again, because we're talking about the current affairs as well, we have this. I have to take the name of Ukraine again.
Mm-hmm. Well, this was what the Prime Minister of Ukraine himself claimed,
that
Iran and the other countries stand firm on your, stances and positions regarding your nuclear power, because this is the trust we did on the U.S., Great Britain, and the Russia Federation,
mm-hmm.
and now this is happening to us.
You know, there is a verse in the Quran that ash-shaytanu ya'idukum al-faqr. The Satan gives you the promise of hunger.
Mm. Yes.
You know, in reality, maybe in front of you, he says, like, I will protect you.
Mm-hmm.
Do not pray to God. Do not do this. Do not do that. But at the end, when it is the time you need help from the Satan,
he deceives you.
He deceives you, and he will not help you, and the hunger will come after you.
Yes.
Now, Ukraine is being, involved in hunger.
Rapper on Eid al-Mab'as talked about taking lessons from history.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, tajrubai tarikhi, taking lessons from history and the experiences that other countries had, and he named different lands, for example, Afghanistan was one of them, the then president of Afghanistan, when he was toppled down and he fled away, in an interview, he talked against the U.S., that U.S. did this and did that, promised me this and promised that. Okay, we'll eliminate hunger from your country, famine, something like that. But none of them happened.
Yeah. We have chapter 2, verse number 267.
Yes.
It says, "Ash-shaytanu ya'idukum al-faqra wa ya'murukum bil-fahsha."
Mm-hmm.
You know, shaitan promises you of the hunger, and he orders you to the indecency, immorality.
Yes.
Wallahu, but Allah, and Allah, ya'idukum al-maghfirah.
Yes.
He promises you the forgiveness. Minhu, from him, wa fadla, and obviously the bounty. Wallahu wasi'un alim. So basically, it is very important to know the taghut, to know your enemy.
Yes.
That was the right thing. But in the methodology, obviously, we have many people who wants to get involved into this jihad.
Yes.
But the first thing is you need to load yourself with the proper weapon
mm-hmm.
for this war. It is a war.
Yes.
This soft war is a war.
Mm-hmm.
And it is not less than the hard war that we had.
Yes.
Obviously, you need to get prepared. You need to load yourself with the proper weapon. If it is the knowledge, you need to get knowledge. It is upon you. If it is about to learn different, applications or the softwares, how to deal with it, how to run, or the social media, how to use it, you need to do it.
You know, the thing that they're doing now, I don't know, have you heard about the Meta Universe or not? The Metaverse and the Meta Project, okay, is a project that the giants of high tech are doing in order to establish, create the goggles that you put on your eyes, and then you enter into a world which is absolutely based on the virtual science, and you can make your land, you can buy it. And the same
company who built the Bitcoin and all those, now they're selling the properties. For example, Taj Mahal has been already sold over there.
Virtual property.
The virtual property,
virtual land.
Yes. And they said that this will finish the corruption. Why? Because everyone knows what you own.
Yes.
So no one can, take it from you. No one can invade you. You know, they cannot crack. The point is, the one who has made this software can crack you. He already has bought everything for himself.
Has got into your mind, through the goggles, you can make your own personality, even with your own characteristics. If you are short in this world, you can make a tall person out of yourself. if you are, I don't know. You
I
know,
remember there was a movie as well.
Yes.
The Hollywood made it.
Yes,
like
yes, yes.
They
yes.
used to put, they were on the computer. They used to put
Player One. Player One by Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, maybe
yeah.
Player One, yeah. So
player
in
one.
That,
game
they put
one.
The goggles. They don't
yes,
have
yes.
the real, in the real world, they don't know each other. They're
okay.
always
That's
you know, got involved in that. The general public, they have different. Those who are involved in the IT, they have different, you know, methods. The lawyers,
yes.
the politicians, they have their own, you know, duties to. They have their own duties to, you know, to perform. So therefore, the methodologies are different. And at this point, obviously, it is hard to just identify. We can identify a couple of them, but not
mm-hmm.
all of them.
Yes,
we cannot just talk about all of them.
Okay,
but thank obviously, you. It should be. It should be whatever we do.
Mm-hmm.
It should be first be prioritized.
Yes.
First of all, you cannot just do anything. You cannot just put hand in anything. Number two, it should be you know in line with the Islamic revolution because that's the lesson which we learned. Obviously,
it should be in line.
It should be in line.
Yes.
With the Islamic revolution,
okay.
It should be with the scientific and logical support and expertise. It cannot be without that. And be practical. You know, sometimes we are we want to do something. But in practical life, we are lazy. So your practice and what you think should be the same. And the last thing, but not least, avoid corruption and sedition. You know, sometimes we think that, okay, someone has put a material about me on the internet or somewhere else. I need to save Islam, for example. I cannot put something which is based on lies against that person. You know, the corruption, this is a kind of corruption.
Mm-hmm.
So it shouldn't be.
So this jihadi tabi must be ethical too.
That is important.
Yes.
It should be ethical and true because
yes.
Islam is the religion of truth.
Yes.
So we don't need any lies.
We do not play the dirty game of
which they are doing.
Yeah.
We don't need that.
We don't need that.
When
okay.
it comes to the tools
okay.
required,
yes.
you know, what is, as Sayyid has mentioned too, the adequate knowledge, right?
Yes.
Being empowered with the knowledge and knowing the subject you're addressing. The second is the ability to promote the correct intellectual discourse,
mm-hmm.
right? Knowledge in itself, you know, which is all over the place, is not enough, right? So you have to develop, and if you already have it, good. If not, then you have to develop the ability to promote the correct intellectual discourse.
That's right.
The third one is the ability to follow the proper reasoning and principles of logic. You know, sometimes people, when they get into this confrontational situation, they put aside logic.
They become emotional.
They become emotional and just, you know, that doesn't help.
Yes.
The fourth one is Islamic akhlaq, as the leader himself has mentioned, the ethics and morals, which, you know, involves and includes taqwa and sincerity.
That's right.
This is something that's a prerequisite for anyone to enter into this jihad.
Mm-hmm.
Without this, you're going to do more damage than benefit.
Yes.
Then acquaintance with social media tools and techniques.
Yes,
like,
this is important.
You know, say, this is very important. If you're going to use it as a means to get to people, you need to know how to work it.
Mm-hmm.
And last but not the least is access to verifiable information, data, and subject matter experts.
That's all right. It's really, I think, a specialized teamwork in order to be done on Jihadi Tabiin. I hope that different groups of the people and those who are interested in this concept, you know, come into the field and, you know, come into the practical aspects of Jihadi Tabiin, because here and there we can see so many people on the members, on the, you know, sermons, giving lectures on the universities and the houses, talking about this. But first of all, we have to understand what is Jihadi Tabiin, what are the categories, what are the main tools. Recently, a book also have been published titled as Jihadi Tabiin by Intisharat Inqilab Islami, Islamic Revolution Publication, compiled by Sayyid Sulh Mirzayi, which is a great book. I think it is about more than 500 pages. It is in Farsi language. I hope it's been translated into English language, other languages too. It's a good book, you know, on Jihadi Tabiin and what Rapper has emphasized on different aspects of this Jihadi Tabiin. Jihad for or of clarification and explanation. Okay, thank you much.
You're welcome.
Sheikh Ali, really fruitful discussion. And Sayyid Mohsen, thank you. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to us. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanullah.
say when I'm too concerned by what they say? Why should I wanna have you to doubt you would be the worst mistake? Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong in a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
Iranian Radio Global Mission. This is Arabi English Radio. Please log on to our website at iranradio.ir. iranradio.ir.
Spring of Souls. In the name of God, Salam, and welcome to the program. The 13th day of the Iranian month of Farvardin, April 2nd, has been dubbed as the Day of Nature in the Iranian calendar. Iranians celebrate this day with going outdoors and spending the day in gardens, mountain sites, and riverbanks. It is the last day of Nowruz and is called Sizde Bedar. Stay tuned for the third and last part of the three-part program, Spring of Souls. Sizde Bedar is an ancient feast and a good opportunity to make close bond with nature and appreciate this precious divine bounty. Iranians enjoy themselves on this day alongside their families and friends. Ancient Iranians used to celebrate the first 12 days of the year in remembrance of the 12th month of the year and finished it with the 13th day in nature. This was, in fact, the beginning of the first half of the agricultural year. Children are very happy on this day as they have the chance to run and play here, free from the confinement of tiny apartments of the modern life. Kebab and chicken are among the popular foods on this day, but other foods are also prepared for the event. Ash is among the foods which is usually found on this day. It is a special kind of broth which is made with vegetables and a special type of noodles or other ingredients. Kuku sabzi is also popular among Iranian families. This food is made with fried vegetables and eggs. However, Sizde Bedar is not limited to foods. People, especially young ones and adolescents, spend part of their time in games such as volleyball, badminton, and national and local games. Moreover, in many regions of the country, families and friends converge to prepare ash together. This food is made in a large pot. Collective games are also common among Iranians on the 13th of Farvardin. Some of them are local ones like Haft Sang, meaning seven stones, while others are globally played games like volleyball. Dear listeners, people in other countries such as Tajikistan, Azerbaijan, India, and Pakistan also go to the nature on the 13th of Farvardin. They have ceremonies like Iranians. In Tajikistan, whose culture is close with that of Iran, Nowruz ceremonies continue till the 13th day. The Tajik people spend their day in nature and prepare traditional foods and play local games. Although this day has no specific name in Tajikistan, the people in this country have customs similar to Iranians. In Azerbaijan, too, Nowruz traditions are like those of Iran, but there is no specific ceremony like Sizde Bedar of Iran. However, people go to the nature in the days after Nowruz. In the north of India and in Pakistan, there are traditions similar to Iran as a result of the impact of the Iranian Sizde Bedar. People go to the nature, but this day has not been officially registered in their calendar. Sizde Bedar is an opportunity for being with each other and entertaining beside one another. It is a time to appreciate the beauties of nature and be thankful of God for granting us infinite blessings. Sizde Bedar reminds us that life is short and transient. It teaches us to respect nature and coexist with it kindly and attentively. It warns us that the health of nature results in our health. On the contrary, if nature is sick, we will be sick. Nature belongs not only to us, but to the next generations. So, it is a crime to break a twig or burn a tree. It would be irreparable to ruin a bird's nest or an animal's burrow. Sizde Bedar can teach us that nature is a divine trust, and we should deliver it to our children and grandchildren. Our happiness depends on the happiness of nature. Today is the day to renew your pledge with nature. It is the day to learn from nature, to be kind and generous to others. Sizde Pedar, the day of nature, is the time to teach the younger ones to protect the nature and not let anyone destroy its beauties or be heedless of its bounties. In short, today is the day to feel responsible towards nature and deem it a sacred creature.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Human Rights Council condemns Israel's renewed onslaught on Gaza, demanding the regime prevent genocide in the territory and lift its illegal blockade. Iran strongly condemns Israel's continued attacks on Palestinians in Gaza and the occupied West Bank, calling for international action to stop the regime's crimes. And the United States carries out dozens of fresh airstrikes on various areas across Yemen, killing more civilians and damaging infrastructure. Thank you for joining us. More Palestinians have fallen victim to Israel's incessant air and artillery strikes in Gaza as the regime's genocidal war rages on unabated across the besieged territory. One of the latest attacks hit the displaced people's tents in the southern city of Khan Yunis, killing nearly a dozen civilians. The new fatalities came after earlier Israel